This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In 2016 alone, nearly 7 million people were displaced out of their homes and to other corners of their country by conflict and by violence. On top of that, some 24 million people were displaced by natural disasters.
That's Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, commenting on the latest report from the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center. Details coming up.
Also, President Trump is in Israel today, his first visit there as an American leader. Italy and several North African countries discuss terrorism and human trafficking, and there are now 37 suspected and confirmed cases of Ebola in remote northern DRC.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
President Trump arrived in Israel today, his first visit there as the American leader. He used the occasion to criticize what he called Iranian aggression and military ambitions. President Trump said this moment in history calls on the U.S. and Israel to strengthen cooperation as they face common threats from ISIS and other terrorist groups. He said Iran sponsors terrorism and funds and foments terrible violence all over the world. He added that the United States and Israel can declare with one voice that Iran must never be allowed to possess a nuclear weapon.
Italy and several North African countries have reached an agreement to address the migrant crisis and combat terrorism and human trafficking. Interior ministers met in Rome yesterday. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments and spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
This was a significant meeting that took place at the weekend, hosted by the Italian government, the Interior Minister Marco Minniti, with the Interior Ministers from Chad, Libya and Niger. The meeting was really to look at the immigration crisis that we're seeing, the arrival of so many coming across the Mediterranean, particularly across sub-Saharan Africa through Libya. And the ministers came together and decided on several things that they think are really important to really counter this issue, this problem. They want to see joint action to fight terrorism and human trafficking. They want to reinforce the borders with more security guards. And they're also talking about supporting construction in Niger and Chad, as well as supporting the management of migrant centres inside Libya to ensure that they meet international humanitarian standards. But they also spoke about the need to improve and promote economic development in the legal world, the legal sphere, authentic economic development in these countries that may slow down and even prevent so many people from seeking a way out through illegal means, through people trafficking.
Did they mention when this might begin, and did they mention a price tag?
There was no talk of a price tag, but at least these talks are a recognition that this crisis is very serious. We see no sign of it slowing down, and it's an understanding between these ministers after the Italian government significantly sought to reach agreement with some of the tribes in southern Libya to try and block that border area. But so far, we're not seeing any evidence of a slowdown in the numbers who are arriving.
Any latest figures on arrivals or rescues?
Well, we've seen several thousand migrants arrive in Italy in the last few days. Around 5,000 were rescued in waters off the coast of Libya between Thursday and Saturday. And that's a huge number, and we're expecting more to be brought ashore today and tomorrow. The Coast Guard has been very active working with NGOs to save people's lives. And this number of migrants really shows no sign of slowing down. We're seeing a significant increase, in fact, this year. So far, we've had more than 47,000 people arrive in Italy, and that's around 30% higher than last year for the same period.
Now, I understand there was also a pro-migrant march in Milan.
Yes, on Saturday, this is quite significant. There's been some controversy in Milan. A couple of weeks back, police moved in to move migrants who were clustering around the Milan Central Station. And this was a significant demonstration of people's support. Around 100,000 people took to the streets to say that they are pro-migrants. They want to support migrants. They want to do everything possible to adopt a compassionate, caring approach to migrants who are coming into Milan and elsewhere in Italy. So that's a very encouraging sign when we've seen really some divided opinion here in Italy emerging in recent months.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna. From Rome, she spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
In 2016, there were more than 31 million newly displaced people around the world, mostly due to conflict, violence, and natural disasters. That's 3.3 million more than in 2015. The annual report from the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center says overall, at the end of 2016, there was a total of more than 40 million newly and previously displaced people in the world. Jan Egeland is Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, which oversees the center. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York about the report.
The big figures this year are the following. In 2016 alone, nearly 7 million people were displaced out of their homes and to other corners of their country by conflict and by violence. On top of that, some 24 million people were displaced by natural disasters. Could be hurricanes, could be floods, could be lots of other forces of nature. Altogether, 31 million people, same as one person per second. So as we speak, many, many families are displaced, either by conflict or by natural disasters, in some cases by both.
How are you able to arrive at these figures?
Well, we have an able team of researchers in our Internal Displacement Monitoring Center in Geneva. And in the end, it's piecing together this picture from more than 100 countries, really. And the last few years have been horrific, really. We've had a much higher plateau of displacement, both by violence and by the forces of nature. So this has to be tackled. We need to put internal displacement on the top of the international agendas.
Let's talk about Africa itself for a moment. Can you give me sort of the big picture in terms of what your report says about the continent?
Africa and the Middle East are the epicenter of displacement by violence, really. Nearly all of the top 10 countries in displacement by violence is Africa or the Middle East. Generally, I would say Asia is the continent of displacement by natural disasters. In Africa, the top country was the Democratic Republic of Congo. It surprised even our researchers that they would surpass now Syria, Iraq, and other countries that have massive attention to the conflict. More than 900,000 people were displaced last year alone in the Congo, and it's continuing massively now in 2017.
What about places like Somalia, South Sudan?
Also horrible what is happening in Somalia and South Sudan. Actually, the number two country in Africa in terms of displacement, with nearly 500,000 people displaced, is Nigeria. You know, you have the Boko Haram violence. You have the counter-terrorist operations. Mm-hmm. There is intercommunal violence. There is a lot of forces at play. And it's, again, a forgotten and neglected crisis that hits and hurts the most vulnerable and the poorest of people.
Once this visibility is achieved that you wish for among governments and aid organizations and that kind of thing, what do you actually want them to do?
We need a lot of things. I mean, certainly we need a lot more funding, not just for the emergency phase humanitarian relief. We need to seek durable solutions. I mean, it's education, it's development, it's building resilient societies that can also, you know, sustain the shocks of nature and the shocks of internal conflict. We need a lot more diplomats, being empowered to do a lot more to seek political solutions. Somalia and the Congo, more than any other place, you know, they're man-made crises. Of course there can be peace, but then the region, the continent, and the international level has to push in the same direction. Get men with guns and power to the bargaining table and not fuel the fire. And then we need general development. If a country is developed, it is strong, there is less displacement than if it's weak, poor, and vulnerable. We do this report because we believe in change. We believe that people will hear our wake-up call, that they will see that we need to revisit and redouble our efforts to bring peace and to bring protection of civilians to the Congo. We need to do more for northern Nigeria. We need to avoid that famine and conflict makes Somalia, that has had a positive development, unravel again. We can fix it, but we need more attention. We need more resources.
Jan Egeland is Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Leaders in development, law, and politics have ended a meeting at the Hague Institute for Global Justice, where they discussed ways of protecting children and schools in conflict zones. The talks were led by the Global Foundation Education Above All, or EAA. Among the participants were the Chief Prosecutor for the International Criminal Court, Fatou Bensouda. One of the advisors to Education for All is Malia Malik, Professor of Law at King's College in London. She told VOA's William Eagle that conference participants were critical of the UN Security Council, which has not been able to end the conflicts that threaten children's education. They also favored moves by the ICC to consider attacks on schools and school children when investigating potential war crimes.
We want to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals, but our argument is that education is more likely to prevent conflict. And what we're saying is that the scale of man-made war and conflict nowadays is threatening education, which is actually creating a cycle of violence out of which societies, such as, for example, South Sudan, find it hard to break out.
Also, I understand at this conference there was some critique of global governance. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a very strong message by the leaders here, all of whom agreed. There's a letter that they signed. Three SDG advocates got together on a platform. Her Highness Sheikh Hamaza, Bint Nasser of Qatar, Greta Michelle, who, you know, very many of your listeners will know, a leader from Africa, Southern Africa, and Faris Whitaker, who does a lot of work in Eastern Africa. All of them got together to actually make the point that the issue has now gone beyond just trying to invest in more schools. The rate of destruction is so high that foundations such as theirs can't keep up. And what we need is reform of the Security Council. What we need is for people to stop using their veto responsibly and to use the parts of the Security Council that bring peace and prevent conflict rather than trying to deal with conflict after it's broken out.
Any particular ideas on how the Security Council would be reformed? And is your program or the backers of this conference going to be lobbying members of the UN or interested parties to promote this reform?
I think we're not going to be lobbying individual state governments. I think what we'll be doing is to take a lead on thought leadership. We will be discussing these issues, and we don't have any particular commitment to one type of reform or another. What we are saying as an organization that's involved in the not just provision of education, but protection of education, is that what we need now is a joined-up approach where we make sure that the provision of education, the sustainable development goals, aren't undermined by the scale of conflict. One of the problems we've identified is that the veto in the UN Security Council by the Big Five is not being used in as responsible a way as we would prefer.
Among those who addressed the meeting was the Chief Prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Fatou Bensouda. What is the link between the ICC and protection of school children in civil conflict?
The Treaty of Rome, which sets out the International Criminal Court, deals with war crimes and it deals with issues like genocide. But what Her Excellency Fatih Bensouda has done is to take a lead on developing what's called the policy paper on children. And one of the things that her team will take into account when thinking about whether or not to bring a prosecution is whether or not scales of violence have targeted buildings such as schools. And that will have an influence on whether or not they think that the crime is grave enough to justify prosecution.
Also, a panel discussion looked at research on education in conflict conducted by your program called Protecting Education in Insecurity and Conflict. What new information does your research show? And does it point to a way forward for strengthening global efforts to protect children?
One of the things we know now is that the provision of the right type of quality education, not just education, but good quality education, which is high quality content, can make conflict less likely. It can make the length of conflict less protracted, and it can make post-conflict recovery quicker. And this is that dilemma, really. In the end, this is the vision we want to convey, is that we have the research now that shows that the failure to provide good quality education is something that is a causal factor in making conflicts worse. So we need education to break the cycle of conflict.
That was Malia Malik, professor of law at King's College in London. She spoke to VOA's William Eagle.
Past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization says there are now 37 suspected and confirmed cases of Ebola in remote northern DRC. Reuters quotes a WHO official in Congo as saying a fourth person likely has died from the disease in Boswale province. More than 400 people who may have come in contact with those who are infected are being monitored.
The International Monetary Fund says sub-Saharan African countries must reduce their debt, diversify their economies, and care for their poorest citizens. Reuters reports those recommendations come from a top IMF Africa researcher, Céline Allard, co-author of the fund's regional outlook. The sub-Saharan region grew by less than 1.5% last year, the lowest level in 20 years. That's well below the more than 5% economic growth in recent years. Allard says some reasons for the slowdown are beyond control, such as drought and low commodity prices. But she says other problems are due to lack of government response.
As animals in the Ringling Brothers Traveling Circus perform their last acts this past weekend, the Humane Society of the United States has revealed results of a disturbing undercover investigation of tiger acts in other traveling circuses. The Ringling Brothers Circus said it closed due to a decline in attendance and high operating costs. However, animal rights activists have been calling for all circuses to stop the use of animal acts. And in May of 2016, Ringling Brothers removed elephants from its shows. In a recent investigation, the Humane Society says it found that from December 2016 through January 2017, several traveling circuses were abusing tigers by whipping and hitting them. Also, tigers were found to be held in extreme confinement and freezing temperatures. Lisa Watney is a captive wildlife protection expert for the Humane Society of the United States. She spoke with me about the investigation and what it means for circuses nationally and internationally.
Our investigator spent about 3 weeks with a tiger trainer and his act, and unfortunately it revealed pretty much what those who pay attention already know, that the tigers used in this circus act are trained with fear and force and punishment. They endure very long periods of time, up to 23.5 hours a day in extremely close confinement in small transport cages. In general, they are denied everything that is natural and important to them. The circus is no fun for any animals and certainly not for these tigers.
So upon these revelations, what is your next step? Has this been reported to a federal agency?
Yes, absolutely. Our goal is always to alert authorities to any problems. In this case, we filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Agriculture for what we believe are multiple violations of the Federal Animal Welfare Act. And we've asked them to investigate. And of course, we provided them with all the evidence that was collected by our investigator.
The Ringling Brothers Circus is permanently ending its traveling animal-based circus acts. Why are other circus acts not doing the same?
It's difficult to say. I think, unfortunately, many of the other circuses have looked at Ringling's departure from the scene as an opportunity for them to pick up more venues and shows. And I think also other smaller circuses simply don't have the fallback that Ringling Brothers does. You know, they own and operate many, many, many other shows, Disney on Ice, Monster Trucks, things like that. So they can afford to let the circus part of it go and focus on their other businesses, which are more profitable.
And of course, circuses, they travel internationally as well, even in Africa. Will this have any effect on circuses traveling throughout Africa?
Absolutely. I think any time information comes to light about the trauma and the stress that animals and circuses endure, it helps animals in circuses everywhere, wherever they're traveling. Because whether it's the United States or South America or Africa, all these animals are being treated the same. There's no way to provide decent, humane care for animals if you're trucking them in tiny cages from city to city to city. It's all the same. And anytime we can get awareness out and get people to stop attending circuses, that's helping the animals.
And regarding your investigation, how long does it really take before some action is taken once you report an abuse?
It's very difficult to know. Unfortunately, a standard procedure for the USDA is that they will not release any information as long as there's any kind of investigation going on. But now, with the new administration, there's been a blackout on even public records that they used to post online. So unfortunately, in this case, it may be a very long time, perhaps years, before we know what, if anything, the USDA did about this situation.
Lisa Watney is a captive wildlife protection expert for the Humane Society of the United States. She spoke with me from Seattle, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the significance of Africa Day. Africa Day commemorates the creation of the Organization of African Unity on May 25, 1963. The historical and cultural meaning of Africa Day.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.